The State Department has spent much of the last decade ensuring it will be ready for the deluge of passport applications it expects over the next 18 months. States' preparations are the results of bad memories from 2007. That was when the government mandated citizens to have passports to travel to Canada, Mexico, and Caribbean islands instead of just using their driver's licenses, and the number of passport applications that came into state created a huge backlog. Brenda Sprague is the State Department's Deputy Assistant Secretary for Passport Services. She tells Executive Editor Jason Miller about why 10 years later, state believes it can handle the expected increase.
When the United States government implemented the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative, we underestimated the number of people who would need passports. And we got ourselves in a bind, and people were waiting for 12, 16, 20 weeks for a passport. We built up a huge backlog. We ended up issuing 18.6 million passports that year. We did a great job. I wasn't working with the organization then, but they did a great job of digging out from under that. But it was the sort of thing we never wanted to have happen again. All those passports, or at least those, all those that were issued to adults, had 10-year validity. So they are now coming up on renewal. And to remember, 18.6 million was 50% more than we had issued the year before. So we have been waiting for this surge to come at us. We've been preparing for it, and we're in the middle of it.
So you know the surge is coming, as you said, 50% increase over the year before, back in 2007-2008 timeframe. So what have you been doing to prepare for the surge that's coming, and you know, you're in the middle of, as you said?
Well, we've had a lot of things that we have been doing. The first thing that we did is using some money that we received from the stimulus package back in 2009, we opened 11 new agencies across the country, and we added counters to some of our facilities that did not have public counters. So we suddenly became a lot more available to people for emergency needs. We have increased our hiring by about 300 people. Back in 2007, we only had about 1,600 people on the payroll. Today, we have about 2,200. And in between 2007 and now, we have had some attrition, and we have built back up. So we are, in that sense, we have created redundancies in our lockbox, which is how all the work comes in. They're operated by the Treasury Department in cooperation with Citibank, and we now have two completely redundant lockboxes, one in Delaware and another one in Irving, Texas. We have two completely redundant, state-of-the-art, terrific call centers, one in Lansing, Michigan, one in Phoenix, Arizona. And we have two book print facilities, one in Tucson, Arizona, one in Hot Springs, Arkansas. And the government publishing office has two facilities, one in Stennis, Mississippi, one right here on Capitol Hill, that actually make the books for us. So we have built a platform that we think can withstand the amount of work that is headed in our direction.
Help us understand a few things. When you say you created a redundant lockboxes, what's a lockbox?
It is a way that Treasury, a lot of companies used to do this when they would have ordered lots and lots of orders coming in by mail. They would all go to a facility, often associated with the bank, that would remove the revenue and move the order along. That's sort of what we do. The Treasury gets the money before we get the application, and then all the paperwork with the application is distributed through a very elaborate system in order to make sure that the workload is moving well to our 29 agencies and centers throughout the country.
So you've added people, you've added facilities, you've added capabilities. One of the things that comes up, though, is did you change the processes? Because a lot of things have changed between 2007 and 2017, both from people, but also the security of passports and what it takes to get a passport in the sense of documents and things that you need. Give me a sense, if you will, of how did you also change those processes? Because that's just as important sometimes.
Actually, we have made the processes more rigorous, especially in the adjudicative side of the house. I think the most important change we made is that we looked at our process top to bottom and we worked to standardize it. When you have agencies scattered all across the country, everybody did things a little bit differently. And so now we have, through training and through auditing, we have a system where everybody is supposed to do it the same way, and we keep an eye on how everybody is doing it. We have regular audit reports. We have error reports, so we know how we are moving the work. And that is the most important thing, because our number one job is to make sure that the only people who get passports are those who are entitled. And that is important both for the integrity of the book, the process, but also for our national security and the security of our borders. So that's job one. But we have also looked at ways to streamline the process so that we don't waste a lot of time in needless administrative activities. And in that regard, we have looked at how we annotate applications. We have looked at ways that we can apply technology. And one of the things that is most exciting for me is we now have so many more ways to verify the data that's presented to us. We have real-time access to Social Security to confirm the Social Security numbers people provide. We have query access to the state's birth certificate data. We have access to death records at the front end of the process, so dead people don't need passports. We have also the ability, and we're very excited about this, the ability to query driver's license databases, because of course most people present a driver's license as proof of their identity. We have access, which we do at the front end, to criminal databases, to people who owe child support, who can't travel till they pay their child support, and also obviously any data that is shared with us by the intelligence community in terms of possible terrorist suspects. So we want to make sure that we only give passports to people who are entitled, and most specifically, that we catch any bad guys who might be wanting to get a passport and go out and wreak havoc and mayhem.
The fact that you guys have such great access, as you said, to state data, to death records, to Social Security numbers, to driver's license, that type of data access is really what's missing in a lot of agencies. Did you work on getting access to all this data over the last decade? I mean, did you have to get the agreements in place and or need help from Congress? Or was this already available, but now it's just better because the technology is better?
Some of it has to do with technology, but the process, and I'm okay with this because we do have privacy laws in this country, and everybody doesn't need to be roaming through everybody's records. But the process is excruciating, and that is when everybody wants to share the data, which is usually the case. But you have to make sure that you have complied with everybody's SORN. You have to make sure that you have a good case for having that data. And then you have to get the systems to talk to each other, which is, as everybody who's listening to this almost certainly knows, it is hard to get computer systems to talk to each other. And we have done a lot of work to make this happen, with some great help from partners like Social Security particularly.
Before the surge, before that you got the surge in 2007, what would you say was the process that needed the most work, and how did you go about looking at your processes and improving them? Was there there's a very popular business process reengineering, and there's, you know, CMMIs and ISOs and all these kind of approaches, methodologies. Did you guys use one, or how did you go about doing that?
Well, it depends on what part of the system you're talking about. For example, at our book print facilities, we have been ISSO compliant almost from the day they opened. We really put a lot of effort. It's very much a manufacturing process, so that made a lot of sense. On some of the others here in the Bureau of Consular Affairs, we have spent for about the last 6-7 years, we've had something called 1CA, and it has been a way of introducing a whole variety of management concepts to our consular managers in passport, but also in visas and overseas citizen services, to look at respected and tried and true management processes and to look at how you re-engineer your processes. And I always laugh that when we get into this, we'll all say, oh, we're going to go all 1CA, because we are looking at these management tools and how we apply them. One that I particularly like is the project charter, so that when you start a project, you actually sit down and decide what it is you're going to do and who's going to do it and when it is that you're going to declare victory and move on to the next project. And I think that that has introduced such a results-oriented focus on everything we've done and has really helped us move some initiatives forward, get everybody kind of committed, because you got a timeline and everybody's looking at it.
When you go through and look at the process, the other side is the people side, right? So what about training of the employees who process the passports and serve the citizens?
We are exceedingly proud of our training program. And if we were to go back 15, 20 years, when someone joined a passport agency, they were put with an experienced passport specialist, and they would teach them the ropes, and they would have manuals that they could read. But everybody did things a little bit differently. Starting about 10, 12 years ago, we introduced what we called the National Training Program. That was a first step. And for 2 weeks, we would train everybody in the correct way to do it. Then they would go back to their agencies and hopefully would continue to do it that way. We have expanded that tremendously in the last 10 years. We now have an entire 1 year, very structured program from the moment people show up, take the oath of office, until they are free to adjudicate without 100% audit. They have a very structured set of things. The national training program, the two-week program, is part of it, but there is a program that they go through for about a month beforehand that just introduces them to the organization. And then there is a mentoring process that goes on about 6 or 9 months afterwards, followed by the intermediate training program, which reinforces all that. And then we have an advanced training program, which is primarily focused on teaching them management soft skills to move up in the organization.